Off the Ball, GAA.
In our setup, it's the next man up. If things don't maybe run your way on a championship day or any day for that matter, the competition is really good.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Formula One pod on Off the Ball. Brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause, have a break, have a KitKat.
Hello and welcome back to the F1 pod on Off the Ball. Formula One is nearly back. We are so close to some action again. And as always, the F1 pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by KitKat, bringing breaks to the fastest sport in the world. Hashtag have a break. And KitKat also brought some KitKats to us, to the Off the Ball office. I have the big package behind me here. As you can see, it is empty because they did not last very long. So thank you very much to KitKat. And I will say hello to Kira Tracy, who, as usual, is on my left-hand side.
Hello, how's it going?
It's good. You're on holiday last week, so you missed Phil McLaughlin.
What an episode, though. What an interview.
What an episode. He was a lovely kid, and I'll be excited to be chatting to him, hopefully, now throughout the Formula 3 season. And then we are also joined for the first time on the podcast by Ross Flanagan over here.
Hello, how are things? Thanks for having me on.
No problem. F1, probably the biggest motorsport fan in the office that we have, and you had a crazy week last week, which is what this podcast is about, if you want to tell people what you got up to last Thursday in Dublin.
So yeah, I was at a Sky Sports F1 event. It was just down the road from us, actually. And Alice was David Croft, Sky F1 commentator, and modern voice at F1.
I would say easily the most recognisable.
Since 2012, I think. Simon Lazenby, who has been the host, and I think he's only missed about 3 Grand Prix.
Been ridiculously consistent for the past kind of, I don't even know how many years he's been.
Proper workhorse.
Yeah, proper workhorse.
And then obviously Bernie Collins as well.
Friend of the show, Bernie Collins.
Friend of the queen.
So they were absolutely brilliant. And Alex Dunn also made a surprise appearance.
Yeah, this was crazy to me because I wasn't there. I was on holiday. Me and you were both on holiday last week, actually.
I'm so jealous.
And I just got a message from one of my other friends who was there, and she just messaged me saying, oh, Alex Dunn's popped up. I said, who? Why? But I suppose it would make sense, it being in Ireland, that he'd show his head or show his face. He didn't last year. This is a kind of an annual event that happens in Dublin. But that must have been was it a shock?
I saw him. I was like, that's, what are you doing here? I was like, I hope I get to interview him. I didn't, but...
He's hot property.
Absolutely, he is, yeah.
It was nice. It was nice hearing from him. It's nice hearing sort of the future, as like you said with Finn there, the future of Irish motorsports at the most attention given to them. So it's good to hear from them. But pity I didn't get to interview him.
And I know that last year Conor Moore hosted. Was that the same?
Same again,
He's so funny.
He's actually, I think he's in News Talk, I think today, or was in RCE or something yesterday. I saw a clip of him speaking on TikTok. And it's the Carlos Sainz impression.
He's put it out right off the bat.
Yeah. When he does it in front of Carlos Sainz, and he's just like, you see his mind blow in real time. He's just like, you sound just like me. And I love his Max Verstappen as well.
Oh, yeah.
He does such a good Max.
He snapped into that one.
Oh, really? He knows what's good. Yeah.
So maybe hopefully in a few years' time, we can have an Alex Dunn F1 impression. I'm not trying to jinx anything. But we have, Ross is very good, and he had 3 interviews with Crofty, with Lazenby, and with the lovely Bernie Collins. And in this kind of episode, it's going to be a little bit of Miami preview, but we're going to touch on these first. And I suppose a few of them touch on Miami, and a few of them touch on, as we were saying, this really exciting time in Irish motorsports. So I think if Brona, our lovely producer, is ready, this is an interview with Crofty.
So we're almost at the end of the 5-week break. We've had 3 races.
Has it really been that long?
Almost.
Wow.
Almost.
It's flown by.
Yeah, I'd say so. What do you think of the season so far?
So the first 3 races, qualifying hasn't been maybe as exciting as some of the fans would have liked, but the racing has been brilliant. And as a commentator, I've been way more exhausted at the end of each race than I have been for a while, because so much has been going on and so much has been happening. But, you know, in hindsight, maybe a few weeks without the pressure of having to go to this race, has been good for a lot of the teams, probably all the teams, just to take stock, to think, right, what package have we got, what's working, what's not working, how do we improve, and to give them more time just to think about that without, as I say, the pressure of going to a race. And for the sport itself, take a little step back and say, right, where can we make a few tweaks? And I think the time has been used wisely. I like the regulation changes. They might not go as far as some people would like them, but we're three races into a season. It's difficult to change things drastically when you're already set for the season in terms of your chassis, your fuel tank, etc. So, I've enjoyed it so far. Yeah, and change is good. And cars that haven't got as much downforce and haven't got as much grip and are lighter, nimble, smaller, that's good racing, yeah? The closeness that you can follow has been really good racing. And we've not necessarily been at tracks all the time that have suited the demands of the energy deployment and recharge that we have from here for the next few years.
Yeah, the five-week gap kind of reminds me of 98 when they went from the Nürburgring straight to Suzuka. They had 5 weeks just to put everything into the cars.
Absolutely. But that was towards the end of a season.
Yeah, exactly.
Though,
that was 2016. But on that note, you were commentating on radio in 2009 when that was a radical regulation change.
Yep.
And then again in 2014, obviously both were won by the Brackley team. And then Mercedes are leading.
Is that what you're saying? Because we've had a regulation change,
no,
right?
No,
it's Mercedes. Don't bother turning up the rest.
No, but how different do you feel of this era? I know, obviously, engines... completely different engine
I think 2014 Mercedes had out and out the best engine. They never even ran it at full power during the course of the 2014 season, and whereas they might have the best engine this year, I don't think there's such a drastic difference between themselves and say Red Bull, who I think actually have got a very good engine. They've got a lot of ex-Mercedes people working for Red Bull powertrains now as well. So whilst look, Mercedes and McLaren who run a Mercedes engine, I think have got the best package, and we'll see more of McLaren in the next few races coming to the fore. Don't count out Red Bull, don't count out Ferrari. It could be so close between the top four teams once again. It's not 2014 all over again.
Thank God for that.
I like some bits of 2014. Bahrain 2014 was magnificent.
Yeah. The jewel in the desert.
The jewel in the desert.
On another note, Verstappen.
Yeah.
He's been banging the drum. I want to, you know, I could be leaving or whatever. The link there I want to make is Ford come in or F1 or whatever. Do you think he might potentially move out? Ford or entering the World Endurance Championship next year? Do you think he might, you know, do an Alonso, take a year out?
Possibly.
Yeah.
I think Max is evaluating all his options at the moment. And GP is race engineer, Giampiero Lambiassi, leaving Red Bull. I believe a conversation would have taken place where GP would have said, look, I've got this offer. Max would have said, look, well, you're silly not to take it. You know, that is a great offer. Go and do it. Don't pin your future to me. Now, is that Max saying, I'm out? Or is that Max saying, GP, look, we've been mates for years. You've got to do best by you. We'll find out in the fullness of time. Max has never wavered from his view of the current regulations. And if he decides halfway through this year that things aren't going to change for the better for him, then he will make a decision one way or the other. And it wouldn't surprise me if he took a sabbatical and went and did other forms of racing, be that WEC, be that sports cars and more Nürburgring races, be that anything. You know, Max loves driving cars, having fun racing, and gets a huge amount of enjoyment from it. So if he's not enjoying F1, then that's counterintuitive to what Max likes to do. You know, and he will be sadly missed in the world of Formula 1 if he does take that sabbatical.
And on driver change, just one last one. Alex Dunn obviously was here today. We've seen the last couple of years was a bit of stagnant subs of movement, and then we got a bunch of rookies in the last 2 or 3 years. Do you think we're going to see if the likes of Alonso might retire, Hamilton might retire, that we will see the likes of Alex Dunn might just finally get that push into?
There's a definite possibility with that. I don't think Lewis is retiring at the end of this year, and I don't necessarily think Fernando's going to retire either. Not while they're still producing the goods in respect of what their car is capable of. does that open up a way for Alex? Look, there will be changes. A lot of drivers out of contract at the end of this year. Alex is in the F1 paddock. He is embedded in the team. He is showing what he can do on the F2 grid as well. And people will take notice of that. And we keep our fingers crossed that he does get into Formula 1 because he's a fine talent and he deserves it.
I love Crofty's voice. I think you're dead right.
And it was so mad seeing him like live talking to you as well, like not just like the voice in my head.
you think that of commentators. The whole point of them is that you only hear their voice.
Yeah.
And then
it's funny because you can imagine like him bouncing around the little
That's
box
it.
They have.
Yeah, 100%.
The
was
way
brilliant.
He talks and all that. He was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And the whole panel they had talking and all that, he was very funny. And there was a lot of things that wouldn't be re-aired, I would say. But it was very, very entertaining.
And he touched on a lot there. His opinions on the new regulations, which I feel like is pretty similar to what a lot of people within F1 are saying, that there's some issues, but it's still exciting, and the racing is exciting, maybe the qualifying not so much.
It's the qualifying.
So that's pretty standard. I was interested in what he said about Verstappen, because I feel like there's kind of two trains of thought, and I don't know which one I'm on, where everything Verstappen is saying, as you said, is hinting towards, well, I don't want to be here and I can do any other form of racing. And yet at the same time, I can't imagine this F1 grid without him, purely because of how close Red Bull still are to being competing at the top. But yeah, Crofty seemed to think it wouldn't be out of the side of the realms of possibility for him to do an Alonso and take a sabbatical for a year.
I think it is, well, we've seen it now with the GTs over the last couple of weeks, that he's just been trying for it. And the Nürburgring 24 is in 2 weeks' time, 3 weeks' time. So it depends on if, you know, how well he's confirmed running in that, isn't he?
The last I heard, yes.
Yeah, after the last round, I'm not sure. But interesting to see how he does in that. And then where does that open up? Alonso, parallel to this, to Alonso, 2017, he skips Monaco and does the Indy 500 and almost wins it, only for Honda having terrible power failures that day.
Yeah.
That's an issue that Fernando has, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
was that Jenson Button who substituted in for Alonso in that Monaco Grand Prix?
Putting Wehrlein on two wheels.
Yes. Oh, yes. This is, again, just before we were on air, we were just talking about, I don't really like talking about hypotheticals, but let's do a hypothetical.
Okay.
If Verstappen was to do an Alonso and would skip an F1 race.
I can see it.
To compete in something like the Indy 500, something like Le Mans, who gets that? Obviously, would one of the AlphaTauris, Toro Rosso, Racing Bulls, whatever they're called this week, they would step up to the second Red Bull seat. Who steps into that
surely
vacated
Yuki.
Seat? Yuki. Oh, I keep forgetting he's not on the grid.
No, and anymore. They keep him around. Do you know that way? Yeah. They do keep him around. I could see that happening.
Because I feel like the fun answer is a Jenson Button-esque answer, where you pull
that's
like a
really
Daniel
fun.
Ricciardo.
That is like fantasy, isn't it? Yeah.
You wouldn't see that happening now. If the Alonso going off to do the Indy 500 happened now, you just get your reserve driver, whoever the reserve driver is.
In Red Bull, they'd probably pull up somebody like Lawson or even Lindblad.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, but who would then...
knowing
them, and they would cause ruptions in that.
It's kind
in
of like
that
a...
sort of development system where instead of taking Lawson, they'd take Lindblad, but...
I'd love to see it. I think he's shown so much, like especially the first two races, just the grit and no shame putting the elbows out. I would love to see him have that opportunity.
I mean, kind of going slightly off topic here on a bit of a tangent, but Zach Brown was saying over this long 5-week break that he doesn't agree with the concept of feeder teams and that we shouldn't be having them in F1. And this is something that I feel like we've had Red Bull with two teams on the grid for so long now, that it's kind of become normalised.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's so different to teams with the same engine manufacturer. Like Ferrari and Haas don't have that same relationship, obviously.
Yeah, McLaren, Mercedes.
Yeah, Williams.
This is tight, but yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, I understand the appeal that it brings to the sport as a whole, like, you know, the kind of drama element of it. I get why F1 would want it. I understand completely why Red Bull like this scenario. They have more cars on the grid than anyone else. But at the same time, I don't like agreeing with Zac Brown, but I think in this case he's maybe right.
I think in today's world now, where we have this hyper amount of manufacturers, like we've had, what, there's like 7 represented in either badge or engine.
Mm.
I think that's sort of, the more you lean towards that and the high amount of commercial ability of promoting the sport, it's hard to justify them.
Yeah, especially with how chaotic they are in managing young drivers' careers. Because you look at Lindblad and you look at I mean, Lawson's been yo-yoing everywhere the past couple of years.
That's more of a point of putting Lindblad in instead of Lawson. That's exactly
it's true.
Why.
There is that trajectory. Like, look at what happened to Gasly and what happened. You know, so many people have been done like dirty with that kind of switch up.
Because I suppose it depends on what your definition of success is. If you are talking about who from the Red Bull Junior program has successfully made the step up from the junior team to the senior team, there's 2 drivers, and that's Vettel and Verstappen, who have... I'm not saying that you need to win a world championship to be considered a successful Formula One driver. You know, Alex Albon arguably has carved out a very solid career right now when he moved away from that Red Bull system. But the amount of drivers who have, you know, tried, failed, crashed, burned,
turfed out,
abandoned. I feel
it is toxic. It's very toxic.
It's not a comfortable environment to look at.
I will say that they do all get sort of a good go at life outside F1.
That, in fairness, is true. They are set up very well.
Scott Speed was the first one to sort of be turfed out. He got moved to their NASCAR team at the time. So he got very lucky with that.
Was he the one who was arrested?
Not sure.
I know, I'm gonna not spread rumors just in case. It's rumors from 2007.
But that's the type of thing where they get turfed out. The one person I always feel sorry for is Nick Heidfeld.
Oh yeah.
Got sort of Kvyat got put forward, and he should have got that Red Bull seat when he did. But well.
Poor Kvyat.
Yeah, he had a great career otherwise.
Yeah. So there's I feel like to wrap up this whole discussion, perhaps we're. For even despite the fact that we're called the F1 pod, maybe we're too F1 focused. There's other avenues, and maybe that's what Max Verstappen
maybe
is
I could
keen
see
to explore.
I think he'll come back.
I could see him in a Ford at Le Mans next year.
Now that would be pretty exciting.
Yeah,
I would like to see that. And I think Crofty, you know, Crofty said it best when he goes, he just loves racing.
This is it.
And if he's not having fun in F1, he's going to look at other avenues. So that was Crofty that we were listening to there. And then the second interview is with Simon Lazenby. And again, another little 3-4 minute snippet of his opinions on the new Formula One era.
How have you found the season so far?
Wow. I mean, it's like only 3 races, as you said, but so much to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, it is a new era of Formula One. And I think there's teething problems. Can I put it like that? There's definitely teething problems. I'm just saying that the sport is aware. You can't please everybody. And I think what we want, and I think my biggest problem at the moment, is that you want to believe what you see. And I think until we get rid of the pure management of these cars, I think once that happens, I think the fans will swarm back to it in their droves in terms of what they want out of it. So I think we've got the smartest people in the world working on this and working on a solution that will please everyone. And I think it's not going to take long before they go flat out in qualifying again. I hope it's as early as Miami.
And as well as that, you're now 15th year of Sky F1.
Yeah.
Which is mad, and you haven't missed
not many races.
Not that many.
No. Well, I was supposed to say, what's your favourite?
My favourite race. It changes year on year out, year in year out, depending on a number of factors. A, the race, B, the weather, and C, the food and drink and company that we have. But I'd suggest that if you're thinking of coming to a European race, Budapest is my number one, hands down. Although I didn't do it for the first time last year, I missed it, and I'm not doing it again this year. But I love that. Great city, beautiful city. We've had some decent racing and great bars, great restaurants. That's fantastic. Then we're going to Montreal in about a month's time. That's superb. Absolutely love that. And when the sun shines, that's epic.
I'll say the week after it, 1 year. Unbelievable.
It's great. But when the sun doesn't shine, you get great racing because it's a fantastic racetrack. And I think if you take that into account, because my other favourite is Melbourne in my top 3, of those 3, the best track is Canada in terms of racing. So, I'd say, you know, it's a toss-up for me between those 3.
And finally, we've had a lot of expansion over the last couple of years. Obviously, the two races that are now sort of struck off might be back. Not sure yet. Do you think it's going to expand more, and is that a detriment or a benefit for the series? Or
I think the Concorde says maximum 25 races at the moment, so I think we'll probably get to that.
Yeah.
I think at the moment the teams are at breaking point. Like, you know, they're having, you know, they, not everyone does every race now, and I think that's the same for us actually. I think Crofton does the most of 21, but most of us do around 16 because of all the travel. You know, it's difficult with families, but I hope it doesn't go the way of NASCAR eventually. And I think
every week,
you know, people understand that this is a global sport. It can't be done. We're at saturation point now. Ideally, I think probably 20 races is ideal, but at the same time I understand why it's at 24, and we're going to some thrilling venues. You know, every year there's talk of Turkey coming back on. There's, you know, they change, as long as they keep changing it and keeping it fresh, I think that everyone will be happy.
I think we'll go back to the first season that you did. 20, perfect 20, 20.
Perfect 20, yeah. That's
the
it.
Best season.
Exactly, even number.
That was a lovely conversation, and I, for one, very much in favour if Turkey was come back on the calendar.
It's great news.
Great news. Do we have a correction?
Yeah, sorry. That the many, is many Red Bull drivers. Heifel. That's John Eichhorn. I always mix them up. Both have won Le Mans in Glasgow. That's the good thing.
Well, because that. Well, you know what? I'd wager that many a Formula One driver would say I'd rather win Le Mans than get, I don't know, have a mid Formula One career. Anyway, moving on. In terms of what Lazenby was talking about there, what I'm particularly interested in is what he mentioned about Miami.
Yes, so that was the key standout thing for me as well. It won't be long until we have our qualifying back and that drivers can go flat out again. So we're not seeing this kind of deploy the battery, charge it, deploy the stop go. And we do have some news that the FIA have came out with a statement verbatim saying that we'll be able to go more consistent flat out driving. So Simon Lazenby is getting his wish. We're all getting our wish, which is more exciting qualifying. And basically what's going to be happening is they have tweaked the regulations. So it's going to be reducing excessive harvesting and encouraging more consistent flat-out driving. So basically there's going to be less lifting and coasting of the cars. We're going to be able to see full deployment, but also safer too. So you know what we saw with the likes of...
Ollie Bearman.
There's going to be less of these kind of closing speeds that are going quicker than, say, when another car is trying to reduce their battery or save their battery. So we are going to see safer driving, but also more flat-out driving, which will be perfect for the street circuit like Miami too, when we have, you know, three straights and then also some more, you know, technical pieces which will allow the drivers to then save up their battery. So it will be hopefully more racing that we've seen in the past and more racing that we love.
Because that was the main thing that I took from Romain Grosjean's opinions on the new regulations. We had him on the pod 2 episodes ago. And he had basically, I'd asked him, you know, would you like to be racing under these new regulations? And he immediately went to talking about the qualifying.
Yeah.
I suppose when I was asking the question, I was in my own head thinking like a race day, like a Sunday. How do you feel over a 72 lap race? But from a driver's perspective, it's the lack of ability with these new regs at the moment to be able to go flat out.
That's it.
And I that's what everybody has been saying that we've been talking to. The journalists have all been bringing up that's what's frustrating drivers the most. That and the safety element of the speed differential, which is what the FIA is trying now to tweak.
I know, and that's another thing. And, you know, drivers seem to be happy. Oscar Piastri said he's happy with it. Then we also have the likes of Mekies, which said it's a good start. So, you know, I think there's more to come, but I think this is good. And it's good that it's happening, you know, coming into our fourth race as well, so rather than the end of the season. So it's going to be interesting. I think Fred Vasseur said that this is going to be like a new championship, the start of Miami. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how these new regulations and also new packages and new kind of car components come into play here.
It is, because the development race this season is so skewed to what it would normally be with this big long break where the factories aren't shut down.
This is it.
As they are in the summer.
In the summer, exactly, there's restriction, whereas the last 5 weeks it's been completely non-restrictive garage time. So it'll be really interesting to see that and see what the software brings and what the data's kind of shown up the last, because it's been a really weird season. I've never known the likes of it, you know, like it's been really strange. And it was weird even when Crofty was saying, like, it's been a crazy 5 weeks. It's been such a slow 5 weeks for me because I've just been desperate to see actual racing.
I'm kind of sad in a way that the first Grand Prix back after so long is Miami, which is one of these new street circuits. It's coming into its fifth year now.
Fifth of eternity.
It has its contract is until something crazy like 2039.
It is, yeah.
For a street circuit that is, by the nature, pretty artificial. Sorry, contract until 2041, which is not a real year, first of all.
It's
and whether they'll be able to even have a Grand Prix that close to the ocean in 2041
oh
is another
God,
thing.
Oh, God, Eve.
The winner so far.
It's a bit far in where that is. It's not in actual Miami.
The winners so far, 2022, Max Verstappen, 23, Max Verstappen, 24, Lando Norris, his maiden win,
yep.
25, Oscar Piastri. You'd have to say, with the way things have been going, we're looking at another Mercedes win, unless the new regulation tweaks are seriously affecting them, but nobody seems to think that's going to be the case.
I don't think it will be. I think McLaren will do better than they have in previous races this season, which isn't hard. But I do think, you know, this is a sprint race as well.
Oh my God, I forgot that.
It's a sprint. Oh. And Lando did win it last year, as well as obviously Piastri came on top last year for the race. So I think they'll be coming in with a good grasp of the circuit. But I do think we're going to have Russell on P1 here.
Oh, you're going Russell
over
not
Kimi. Yeah, yeah. I do think George will be like, right, I'm going to regain this now. I'm not going to let this. I suppose he wouldn't look down on Kimi because he's 19. But I do think it'll kind of be more geared towards George, I think, this time after the wait. But Mentum won't be on Kimi's side as much as well, I think.
Yeah, that is the thing I feel a bit sorry for Antonelli about, is that once you've kind of got in the swing of things, the last thing you want is a 5 week
I know.
Break. Before heading into and also there's a 3 week break after Miami. I think the next race isn't until May 24th.
Oh my God.
Is it Barcelona?
The Grand Prix schedule this year obviously seriously affected by the conflict in the Middle East. But Canadian Grand Prix, 24th of May is the next one. But speaking of Miami, somebody who we are going to be talking to next week to look back at whatever will happen in that race is friend of the show, Bernie Collins, who along with Shane was an F1 pod regular at Stalwart a few years ago. And she is obviously former head of strategy at Aston Martin, currently works for Sky Sports. And Ross was also chatting to her at the Sky Sports event. And here's what she had to say.
I know, three races into the season. We're almost at the end of the 5 week gap. What do you think of the season so far?
Yes, we did. I think like we feared over the winter that it would be much worse. We were really unsure how the new regulations would go. There's a lot of scaremongering around it, so I think it's been better than expected. I've loved the race and there's loads more action happening on track. It's almost a bit difficult to know where to look at times. So yeah, I think it's good. I think qualifying needs work. I think we're all admitting that, so we'll get there.
And for your background as a strategist, what does this new regulations mean for strategy? Like, is there more teams? Like, is there more, obviously there's more, you know, factors you have to take into it, but how different would it be for the teams?
I think it is difficult because I think there's a few things. You've got more overtaken, which is more sort of variable to put into the race. There's more risk of safety cars because of the difference in speeds that we've seen, and you're not really sure when they're going to come, and more unreliability, which is bringing more safety cars. So there are two things that you sort of have to deal with mid-race. As well as that, there's sort of trying to come up with your driver so that he understands the overall game plan that you're playing to make sure he's not overusing his battery or underusing his battery. So you need to be much more aligned, I think, between the pit wall and the driver now.
And another one is Alex Dunn. Obviously, he was here today. Do you think, you know, he's a good chance of making it? And do you think that there'll be a pathway now with the volatility of contracts and drivers might be retiring, the likes of Alonso and stuff like that, could be in the next couple of years? Do you think he's a good chance of making it?
Yeah, I hope so. I think that a lot of these things with drivers, and we think of the drivers that we have on the grid at the minute, driver contracts are so underrated in terms of how important they are. You think Alonso, for his great skill, could have won much more championships if he was in the right car at the right time, and there are maybe other drivers who think the other way. So I think if he can get the Alpine seat of things good, I think there will be opportunities there, maybe more so than there would have been with McLaren. So hopefully with the right sort of management, the right team around him, that will start to open up again, and there will be more and more opportunities. He's showing, he got in that McLaren last year for a P1 session, and it looked really, really good from the outside. So hopefully he gets the opportunity with Alpine this year, which would be great. And yeah, I hope we can go far.
And on that, Alonso, Aston Martin, former team, what do you think of them so far this season? It's not really going well, is it?
It's not going well at all, and I think like they'll happily admit that. I think that it seemed really, really difficult from the outside. I think there's lots of, the engine obviously is a highlight, and we talk about that a lot, but I think there is how it's integrated in the cars, and chassis isn't going well, how the gearbox is all working together is not necessarily going well. So a lot of work for the team to do, and they've had a relentless few years of trying to build this team up, and none of it's really quite worked in the same way as it had, and it's gone through massive changes in terms of the factory and everything going on in the background. So I'm hopeful that with the resource behind them they can pull it round, but I think everyone there has been pretty like worn out at this stage.
At what point does a team cut their losses and go, right, we're going for next season, like we're putting more resources into next season?
I think it's very difficult because you know that these regulations are going to carry on to next season. So when you've got a big regulation change between last year and this year, you can do that because the development on last year's car isn't necessarily going to contribute to this year's car, but any development on this year's car is going to help next year's car, unless you're like fundamentally changing some sort of internals. So I think you need to be a bit more managed this year on how you do that, because any learning you get on this year's car will help next year's car. So I think it's got to be much later in the year before teams sort of decide to do that.
And predictions for the end of the year?
Predictions? I sort of think Mercedes can hold on to it. I think it's between their two drivers who can deal with the pressure the most. George, obviously, more experience, has potentially the upper hand there. But I think McLaren are going to very, very quickly close the gap. So let's see.
They overcame the second round of
exactly.
I was saying to Crofty there that every single time they've had a regulation change, the team from Brackley seems to just fly through it.
Yeah.
So
I think it's when we've had big regulation changes that are engine dominant, and this one's definitely engine dominant. I think when we went to the ground effect cars, Red Bull really came to the front because they'd sorted their engine and their aerodynamics were so good. So the Brackley team that's been built together with Toto, they're a really, really strong team. They're going to be really hard to beat.
Just want to also thank Megan Scully and Helen Kenny for kindly holding a camera there. We had no tripod, so
great work. Teamwork.
Exactly,
teamwork at Marconi House. What I want to touch on very briefly, because obviously we'll be chatting to Bernie next week more,
so excited
in depth, very excited about that. Her Alex Dunn take I think is incredibly sensible. It's sort of, we're not entirely sure what's happening or what will happen. Contract volatility may play in his favour. It's good that he has a junior team, not junior team, but a pathway that he's attached to with Alpine, even though perhaps it's not as... if he had got into Red Bull, there's a more definite pathway. If he had gone in McLaren, there's more outside F1 opportunities, but still he's attached to a team. He performed very well in an FP1 session last year. Hopefully he'll get another one this year. I feel like right now it's just a waiting game.
It is. And he's on the radar. Like people know he's there. People know that he's putting in like great work. And I think that will more than anything work in his favour. I don't think he needs those names attached to him as much. I think he'll get snapped up really easily.
Do you?
I genuinely do. Yeah. I see. Maybe it's just bias, but I do think he's going to be an F1 driver. Like...
Because it was interesting what I think it was maybe Crofty, you said it too, that a few years ago we had this huge influx of rookies, like four or five in the one season, and it's slowly kind of petered out because of the incoming regulation changes where teams are like, we want stability, you know, Cadillac coming in and they're like, we want Perez, we want Bottas, we want these very stable old... Exactly. Whereas in 2 or 3 years' time, would they be able to take a risk again?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Like, the regulations that we had were 2014, let's be honest, 2014 all the way up to the last year.
Yeah.
So you need, why change when you have drivers that are suited to these cars? I can understand when the new regulations came, understand people that have F1 experience. Also, I will say for Cadillac is their first choice, Colton Herta, didn't have the right license points.
Yes, I remember that.
And is now battling against Alex Dunn for those license points. But I don't know, it's you wonder, strategy, marketability as well is a big one.
Do they make enough of a splash in F2, like Alex Dunn? Do they have a huge country backing them in terms of popularity, not even money? I think that's the main reason to change the rookies and stuff like that this day and age.
I feel like it sounds like a very simple and very obvious thing, but he will need to keep winning races.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, yes, money counts for so much to whether you can get into Formula One, but to reach Formula Two, you know, to have a consistent, pretty slightly messy at times, a pretty consistent rookie season in Formula Two, without the backing of a major motorsport country, I feel like the results are going to count for a lot more.
Yeah, reputation it is, and his name. You want to keep on hearing, you know, Dunn, you know.
You want to keep on hearing it without. Dunn has caused a three-car pileup. I feel like he's still a very young driver. I feel like we're so conditioned to think that in Formula One now, if you've not made it when you're 21 years old, you're not going to make it. Kimi Antonelli being 19 is a freak of nature thing to be happening, to be
leading
championship.
And he's leading.
Exactly. So, as always, the likes of Phil McLaughlin, the likes of Alex Dunn, someone that we are... people that we are incredibly excited about and that we will be hearing more about over the next few years. If you've been following the action this season and are in need of a reset, why not hit the brakes and pause to enjoy a Kit Kat Junkie, have a break, have a Kit Kat, our lovely sponsor on this F1 pod. And I wanted, before we leave, thank them again for the chocolate that they sent us. Ross, thank you very much for all your reporting.
Thank you.
Kira, thank you very much for joining me as usual. You. And I'm ridiculously excited to be back next week for a proper podcast to look back at the Miami Grand Prix. So until then, it's bye for now.
The Formula One pod on Off the Ball. Brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.